I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Live Mike. I'm Lee Lonsberry. You heard it right there. We each week will be looking at a different race underway in the state of Utah. Congressman Chris Stewart currently represents Utah's 2nd Congressional District, and he joins me now to talk to me both about his campaign, the efforts he's undertaking to convince Utah voters that he remains qualified to serve them in Congress, and also about a major accomplishment of his, and it deserves congratulations. It was just the other day that the House of Representatives passed the National Suicide Hotline Designation Act. This is something the congressman has been working on for a long, long time. I can remember when I myself was a congressional aide, seeing his staff and he himself working very hard on this effort. Congressman Stewart, welcome to the program.
Lee Lontre, it's always good to be with you. Thank you.
Tell me what it means to have cleared this final hurdle.
Well, you know, it's interestingly that in the sense that, you know, it's been a few years now since you were working with us back here on Capitol Hill, and it's a good illustration that, you know, this was bipartisan. Oh my gosh, we had hundreds of co-sponsors, Republicans and Democrats. Didn't cost any money, and it was demonstrably, I mean, easily shown that this was going to save thousands of lives, and yet it still took almost 4 years to get it through Congress. And you know, it's just way Congress works. It's way our founding fathers set it up. But you know, the good news is we're finally there. This will save thousands of lives. If you're in the middle of a mental health crisis, if you are despairing and feeling like there's no hope, if you're worried about your spouse or your daughter or your son, whoever it might be, there is help. 988, we're going to help you. We can help you. And we're just, you know, grateful that this is going to go to the president's desk. And we'll have this national suicide number anywhere in the country, call 988, and we're going to be able to help you. And we're grateful to be there finally.
Have you had yet contact with the White House? Any indication of when this might be signed?
Well, we've had some conversations with them. It's a little uncertain. It turns out that there's some other things going on in Washington right now. Maybe. they're a little busy this week, as you can imagine. And so we'll see. I mean, we're anxious for it to go. It's going to take a little while to implement it as well. So it's not like we have to, you know, get it signed into law today. But the sooner the better. We look forward to standing behind the president and watching him sign this legislation.
Outstanding. And remind listeners, pending the signature of the president, when ought this three-digit number be a tool for those in crisis?
Yeah, about a year. We give time for the FCC to work with the telecoms in order to put in the technological backbone. It's a little more complicated than you might think, and we got to make sure that when the people call, they actually get through and that they get help. So it'll take just about a year, as I said, to finish that kind of the backside of this. But it'll go quickly, and it'll work. I'm sure that when we get it there, it's going to work. But that's what we got to make sure is that there's no glitches when it comes live.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, that's an area where glitches are unacceptable. You as a pilot know that there are some things, some tasks we undertake in life where there is zero margin for error, because sometimes a mistake in the wrong place can quite literally cost a life.
And mistakes do happen. That's why you build ejection seats, right? But you want the ejection seat to work. And in some ways, this is the ejection seat. I mean, for people who are desperate, this is their kind of their last hope, and in some cases their last reach out. And so, we need to absolutely make sure that they've got the call that goes through and that they could get the help they need. And by the way, Lee, and I know you know this because you've mentioned it yourself. Utah does a fantastic job on this. I mean, so much so that other states often will direct their calls to Utah call centers, and it's some of our locally elected officials who were the kind of the geniuses and the genesis behind this. They're the ones who helped me in first conceiving of this idea. So once again, Utah leads the way, and we're grateful for some of the local leadership that's been so helpful for us.
Very good. I want to shift gears a little bit here. The point of this segment is to get a look at not necessarily the politics or positions, but rather the details. What's going on behind the curtain in the life of a candidate? You have run for Congress a number of times successfully and are doing so again right now, looking to retain your seat in the House of Representatives. You are also serving as a member, casting votes back and forth to Washington, D.C. What are the campaign efforts like right now? How do you spend your days communicating with potential Utah voters?
Yeah, well, it's a little bit different this cycle, obviously, because of the coronavirus has changed things for us a little bit. You know, we went months without being able to meet with people, not face to face. You know, one of the fun things I get to do, and that's true whether people come to yell at you and tell you, you know, how much they disagree with you, or once in a while people come and say, hey, thank you for what you're doing. But those face-to-face meetings, the town halls, the sitting down with these constituents and hearing what's on their mind is an incredibly important part of the job of a candidate who wants to represent people. And that's been, as I said, very different this year, although it's a little easier now. I mean, we're planning town halls. We're planning open forums. I think we're going to do it carefully. We're going to do them all outside where we can, you know, have some separation between us, you know, the fresh open air. Do everything we can to make sure that people are wearing masks and we're trying to be gracious and careful for one another. But at some point, Lee, you just think, I've got to go meet with the people. I've got to hear what's on their minds. I've got to give them a chance to respond to me. And we look forward in the last, you know, 5 or 6 weeks of being able to have more of that than we were able to do, say, in, you know, February and March when things were, you know, just really restricted for us. And the second thing I'll say to answer your question is, you know, even as we speak, I'm sitting on the steps of the Capitol. I just stepped outside of the House chambers. We were voting. And I'd love to be home campaigning, but I also have to respond to my job right here. And so one of the challenges we have is trying to find time to do both.
Mm. It sounds as though our connection is poor. Congressman, you're breaking up a bit there. Let's try once again. You're sitting on the floor, or you're sitting on the steps of the U.S. Capitol, and what's on your mind?
Oh, my gosh, I'm sorry you missed this. Is this better?
Yeah, I've got you now.
Oh, man, I'm sorry. I might have gone into a dead spot. And everything I said was so brilliant. I'm so sad that you missed it.
I'm sure that was the case.
Well, I'll condense it because I know you've got limited on time. But I'm sitting on steps of the Capitol as I stepped out because we're in the middle of voting. And one of the challenges that I have as an incumbent is you want to sit down and meet with people. But on the other hand, I have my job to do here, and you have to find time to do both. And then again, the challenge of the coronavirus, which made it, you know, very difficult for us, almost impossible to meet face to face. And we're so glad now to be in a situation where we can have more of those face to face meetings when I am home.
Yeah. Congressman Stewart, thank you for your time. Thank you for your work on this 988 bill. Incredibly important, and I share the urgency for getting it up and running. Best of luck as this moves forward next summer of next year. That will be a resource for folks in need. Thanks again, Congressman.
Thank you so much, Lee.
All righty. We're going to take a quick break here, and when we return, we'll be joined by Utah Senator Mike Lee. He has made it known that he will be supportive of the process undertaken by the President of the United States to nominate a replacement for the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, as well as the Senate's responsibility and duty to confirm, at least here. And that's coming up next. We'll speak with the senator on Live Mic. I'm Lee Lonsberry, and this is KSL News Radio.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.